Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Hello, folks, and welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate, personalized service. If you're looking for quality food, check them out. That's Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry, who has been 23 years in the real estate business here in Central Iowa. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, Ed Fallon with you here, folks, and happy St. Patrick's Week. And a quick shout-out to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. As we record this program here in Central Iowa, we are just crawling out from under a pretty impressive blizzard. Howling winds, the gusts last night were over 50 miles per hour. We didn't get a lot of snow here. We kind of lucked out on. We dodged that bullet. But north of us, more than a foot, even 2 feet in some places. Gusts over 65 miles an hour. Yeah, a real genuine prairie blizzard. But you know, we kind of expect this sort of thing in Des Moines, in Iowa, in the upper Midwest. But my wife and I have an urban farm. And there were a couple things I was concerned about. Always a little concerned about the bees, but you know, they tend to be okay. They tend to hunker down, surround that queen, keep her at 92 degrees Fahrenheit. She's pretty picky, you know. And they usually make it through okay. I was concerned about our cold frames because I thought the wind might actually tear the glass panels off them. It was blowing so strong. I've had that happen once before. My biggest concern was the baby rat. We have baby rabbits just under 2 weeks old. And the mom laid them or birthed them outside of the nest for some reason. And I thought, well, they're going to be okay. And they were. They're fine. I counted four of them in there just now. They're all warm and cozy, despite it getting down to 8 degrees. So, yeah, bring on the blizzards. We can handle this. Although we're all very much ready for spring. So, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about our little urban farm here. Because, it survived the blizzard. It's survived heat waves. Although one of the biggest challenges, there are more and more big challenges. For example, crops not pollinating correctly because it gets too hot. Rabbits really struggling in the heat and needing fans and bottles of frozen water and constant monitoring of their temperature. But, you know, what we've been able to do here is create an ecosystem without chemicals. Or chemical fertilizers or pesticides, and it's a great place because it feeds us. I mean, between what we grow here and what we forage, Kathy and I get half of our food from that effort, which is to me very exciting because it's very high quality food. But the other really neat thing about it is that we have created an environment, and it's very small. We don't have a lot of land. It's just a small holding. Less than an acre. But we've created this intense habitat that is very attractive to birds, small mammals, some of them welcome, some of them not so much. Insects, again, some welcome, some not so much. But you can't pick and choose. An ecosystem is diverse. Everybody wants to eat. Some want to eat other people, some want to eat other animals and birds and insects, you know, but I travel around the neighborhood or other parts of the city where you've got monoculture lawns or very sterile environments in front of people's homes or along the street. And you don't see that kind of bird activity. You know, sometimes I'm on a phone call out sitting in the garden, and this happens frequently, actually. Somebody, the person I'm talking with, will say, "Wow, what do you got going on there with all those birds?" And I say, "Well, they like it here. They come here because we've got habitat, we've got food." And, you know, I know when you're involved in what's called production agriculture, you don't want any other life form taking any percentage of your crop at all, whether it's a fungus or a blight or a insect. You want it all for yourself. I get that. Especially with the margins in farming these days, I don't fault farmers for trying to make sure they have no competition for their product. We don't mind some competition. We don't mind sharing some of our lettuce, for example, with the occasional rabbit. We don't mind a few aphids. When they get to be an infestation, yeah, we get out the neem oil or the insecticidal soap. But, you know, some loss is going to come when you don't use chemicals. And that's okay. We still can produce 50% of what we eat. Yeah, bottom line is other creatures got to eat too. And, you know, creating an environment where they feel healthy and happy as well means you've got a place that's healthy and happy for you also. I want to share an Irish, again, St. Patrick's Week, so everything's Irish here today, right? Hey, so I want to share a message from Mary Reynolds. She's, I've not heard of her till recently, but she's a fairly renowned landscape designer. Actually, I think she calls herself a recovering landscape designer. She's an author. She's a nature activist. She is from Wexford, Ireland. And she was known years ago, back in 2002, for being the youngest woman ever to win a gold medal at the Chelsea Flower Show. Okay, I hadn't heard of the Chelsea Flower Show either, but I guess it's fairly prestigious as far as flower shows go. She's an advocate for rewilding gardens, again, growing food, but also leaving plenty of habitat for nature to run its own course. She encourages biodiversity, and when possible, returning land to its native state. And she calls these places arcs. And I want to play a clip from one of her recent productions.
Through Irish mythology, we are left messages, warnings. The old stories show us that regimes and cultures rise and fall repeatedly, that sovereignty is lost when the world falls out of balance with nature. We often hear about the future possibility of collapse these days. Collapse in society, ecology, and climate. But collapse, according to our ancestors, is not the end of the world. It's a cycle, a wave. And restoration only comes through returning to right relationship with the land. Across Irish mythology, these collapse patterns emerge again and again through the loss of sovereignty. They appear when leaders break their promise to care for the land and her people, when taking without tending becomes normalized, when boundaries are violated, and most importantly, when truth is abandoned. The myths tell us that when these laws are ignored, the land becomes barren, crops fail, people and the natural world grow sick, and the society, the order, begins to fray. These stories return again and again, not as prophecies, but as warnings encoded as story. And here we are. Very few people are telling the truth these days. The media and political players, our leaders, are following the same arc described in these warning stories. Breaking promises, taking without return, and reshaping truth into a weapon, something to be punished if spoken and suppressed at all costs. We are not facing into a crisis. We are living through one. It is unfolding before us. Irish mythology also shows us what happens next. When the world becomes hostile to the old ways, life withdraws into refuge. Like the Tuatha Dé Danann, the spirit of the land doesn't disappear, it retreats into hidden pockets, waiting for the time it can return. When humans forget they belong to the land doesn't die, it removes itself from them. Irish mythology never predicted an apocalypse. It warned us about what happens when we break our bond with the land. And it reminds us that life survives by retreating into the places where it is still honoured. Our arcs are not going to solve everything, but they matter. They are places of retreat, where nature can still hold her ground, where she can continue in whatever ways remain possible. Small patches of living refusal, places where life can wait. Seeds of restoration placed gently into a damaged world, so that something can still grow again when the time is right. When we remember how to go back into right relationship with this beautiful planet.
I found that very moving, very compelling, and very appropriate again from an Irish woman talking to us during St. Patrick's Week. So Reynolds talks about building an ark, or building lots of little arcs, about rewilding. And again, you know, here's my thought. Kathy and I live in the heart of Des Moines. That's Iowa's largest city. It's also the fastest growing urban area in the Midwest, which I'm not particularly happy or excited about. But, you know, much of the countryside in Iowa is so altered. And again, I'm not blaming farmers. It's a system set up that has trapped people in this approach to managing the land that is not sustainable. And there's a lot of pushback happening right now. But in the meantime, we've had a countryside that's so altered. Yeah, sure, there's still deer and raccoon out there and other animals, but gosh, a lot of them have moved to the city. you see all these animals here in the city. Foxes, owls, possum, raccoon, deer. They're all thriving here, more than a lot of people would like. but you know, much of their natural habitat has been plowed under. And, you know, there's zero diversity across thousands of acres of land in rural Iowa. And so And this is not, I joke about that. I say, you know, maybe we should urbanize all of Iowa. No, I'm totally kidding. But maybe we should begin to find out how we can create better spaces that are both productive in terms of, producing food and other basic needs for humanity, but also that don't discourage other wildlife, other life forms from thriving. And we've seen a drastic drop in the number of insect populations. Bird populations have also plummeted. Those are not good signs. I mean, what Mary Reynolds is saying about that is accurate. You know, and also part of it is who owns the land. More and more it is owned by absentee landlords, out-of-state billionaires like Bill Gates. Bill Gates owns 275,000 acres of farmland in 18 different states. On top of that, you've got foreign investors who now own 45 million acres of U.S. farmland. So there's an ownership problem. There's a problem of how the government intervenes in the market to make it very difficult to do anything other than what the big corporate interests want. A lot of that has to do up here with corn and soybeans, hogs and cattle. Anyway, it's changing, and we have to do our little part to change it. And, you know, as Reynolds was saying, you know, take your little piece of land, whether it's a farm or an acreage, or in our case, less than an acre, or southern windows in your apartment, you know, and try to create that space where life can thrive. And you can get some personal benefit in terms of food out of it, in terms of beauty, and maybe it can benefit some other life forms as well. Now, I want to, again, this being St. Patrick's Week, I want to talk a little bit about my least favorite Englishman of all time, and it's a long list, Oliver Cromwell. In the 1600s, for a span of time, he invaded Ireland to subdue it. I mean, the subduing of Ireland had already been underway, but the Irish kept fighting back. Cromwell came in, and an estimated 200,000 to 600,000 Irish people died through either the war or subsequent famine and plague. There are these monsters throughout history. Vlad the Impaler, Attila the Hun, Adolf Hitler, of course, Joseph Stalin. You know, they're monsters, and they did horrible things to the people and to the land, and yet we have survived. The Irish survived. Now have their own country, most of it. The earth has survived. This time is different. I don't know. It is different now. It's very intense. I mean, we have climate change. We have weapons of mass destruction, not just nuclear, but chemical and biological. And we have this new threat of AI. Yeah, I mean, it often seems like we might not make it through this. But again, I go back to Ireland. 600 years of British occupation and oppression, and many people during that time had no hope. But there was always a group of patriots that fought back. You know, and it wasn't just the people, too. The people were oppressed, but also remember, Ireland used to be covered with forest. About, 80% of the country was forested. But the trees were also cut down about the same time Cromwell invaded by the English. So, you know, but a core of people have kept resisting and finally accomplished independence in 1922. And there are those who are now pushing for more reforestation, including myself. I've been doing my part to try to encourage that. So the important message here is don't give up. You know, when you quit believing that we have a future, and especially when you quit fighting against the forces that want to destroy the future and all that's good and just in the world, and that's when despair sets in, and that's when the hopelessness that we see so much of these days takes root. You know, it poisons your whole being. It poisons the world around you, and we have to not let that happen. We have to not let that. That's when the oppressors win, when despair sets in. So I believe it was Joan Baez who used to say, action is the antidote to despair. And she would say that to encourage people to take action, you know, against injustice, against war. And it's a great quote. It's one I use a lot. Like Mary Reynolds, again, if you do what you can, if you've got a little piece of land or a window, whatever it is, bring life to that place. And not just some, you know, crappy grass that is sold to you under the illusion that a perfectly green lawn is the way to go. Yeah, maybe you have some of that, because it is nice to go sit on a green lawn. I get that. But, you know, diversity. We need diversity in our communities, in our lives, for me, in my music, and certainly in our environment. We need diversity. I guess to use Mary Reynolds' expression, make an ark. You know, make your ark. And again, this won't be like the ark in the Bible. That's a story. We're dealing with real stuff right now. But, you know, but again, don't just stop at building your own ark, or maybe working to, I mean, I know people who are working to rid our forests, our parks, of invasive species, all great stuff. But remember, take the time to also engage with the world around you, with the policies that need to be changed, with the people that need to be in power to make the changes that we need. You know, again, action is the antidote to despair. Thank you, Joan Baez. But that action cannot just be in your own little bubble. Build that ark, but also help the rest of the world, you know, make sure we've got that structure in place that is going to be as resilient as possible as the terrible stuff that's happening continues to move forward. I have no doubt that we haven't reached the bottom of this yet. Just be honest about that. We haven't reached the bottom of this yet. But remember the resilience of the Irish and the resilience of other indigenous and native peoples in our own land and around the world. And it really is the wisdom and tradition and perspective of native communities that has been the answer to war and oppression and injustice in the past. And I think that, you know, going forward, we will rely more and more heavily on their perspectives. And for me, a lot of that involves my perspective as an Irish American with strong connections to the homeland. I'm going to leave you with another recording here. This is Christy Moore singing Irish Ways and Irish Laws. And we'll go from that into a break and be back with you a few minutes after that with more conversation on the Fallon Forum.
Once upon a time there was Irish ways and Irish laws, villages of Irish blood, waken to the morning, waken to the morning. Then the Vikings came around, turned us up and turned us down, started building boats and towns. They tried to change our living, tried to change our living. Cromwell and his soldiers came, started centuries of shame, but they could not make us turn. We are a river flowing, we're a river flowing. Again, again, the soldiers came, burnt our houses, stole our grain, shot the farmers in their fields, working for a living, working for a living. Eight 800 years we have been down, the secret of the water sound has kept the spirit of a man above the pain descending, above the pain descending. Today the struggle carries on, I wonder will I live so long to see the gate being opened up to a people and their freedom, a people and their freedom. Once upon a time there was Irish ways and Irish laws.
Thanks to Central Iowa Realtor, Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks. And thanks to our sponsors, including Catholic Peace Ministry. CPM promotes peaceful resolution to war and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrum Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrum and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry. All right, so we've talked about this before, and we're going to talk about it a lot because it is, I think, one of the most important things we can do right now is to be aware of the threat to the 2026 election. And I'm encouraged to see that several states that tend to be Democratic are moving. One proposal is to prevent federal immigration agents from being anywhere near polling places and other election sites. There's a precedent for that. If you're a candidate or if you are with a candidate's campaign, you can't be getting too close to a polling place. You know, so there's a precedent for that, and there's even a stronger reason why this is a bad idea to have immigration agents or any kind of, you know, federal military or police authority at a polling place. It's very intimidating. And it's also based on this false premise that somehow the election is going to be stolen or corrupted. And we know that story, right? Back in 2020, you know, President Trump and his handlers and others just kept saying over and over again, stop the steal, the election was stolen. Nothing to see here at the U.S. Capitol with all these, quote, peaceful protesters, this day of love, even though the video footage and the real video footage, not the fake video footage, the real video footage shows exactly what happened. It shows nothing about it resembles a peaceful protest. Anyway, so despite that, sadly and disturbingly, over 60% of Republican voters still believe the 2020 election was stolen. So, you know, there's an old law. It's an old federal law, and that bans sending the military or other, quote, armed men to polling places. Except, well, there's an exception, and that's to repel armed enemies of the U.S. Okay, I get that. But what Trump is proposing to do, the enemy here is the lie that this election is going to be stolen, that the election of 2020 was stolen. And again, I've said this before on the show. There were, what, 8.2 million votes cast in Georgia in 2020? 20 of those votes were fraudulent. 20 out of 8.2 million. So, and the same here in Iowa. I think in Iowa we had a lot less than that. We had, what, 2 million votes here cast in Iowa? I think there were 35 questionable ballots. I mean, that's a rounding error. And some of those may have been people who innocently, mistakenly, and sure, there may have been some that were deviant. But come on, that is not a problem. You know, that's not going to tip an election. Okay, so it just shows you the power of a lie. Repeat the lie often enough, election stolen, and then you can, you know, get that amplified by certain elements of the media, especially on social media, and people will continue to believe the lie. Like, again, 60% of Republican voters still believe in 2020, the election was stolen. So I'm glad to see that there are states pushing back against the threat of having the U.S. military or ICE agents or other law enforcement from the federal government at polling places. We'll see how that goes. It bears watching. It bears repeating often, and taking action to counter it. I got to say a word about Kristi Noem. I'm going to quote Garrett Graff, who wrote, "To say that Kristi Noem will be remembered as the worst, most corrupt Secretary of Homeland Security is hardly worth writing down. Perhaps the best thing that can be said is that history's sad conclusion about the tenure of the dog-killing, cosplaying, taxpayer-fleecing, wallet-losing, blanket-losing, house-stealing Noem will likely so focus on her comic book villain levels of personal corruption and high-level living escapades with alleged paramour Corey Lewandowski, that it will forget the sheer vile evil of her crimes against humanity." That is a mouthful. That's all one sentence, by the way. It's colorful, it's creative, it's clever. It borders on name-calling, although, you know, I mean, nothing in there is not based on something true. And, you know, I mean, how many, I forget the figure now. Was it over $200 million that she spent? That may be the wrong number, but she spent this incredible amount of money promoting herself in ice videos on horseback and doing other very American things. But what, I mean, and there's been a lot of people who are relieved that Noam is gone, and some of them, yes, Republicans as well. But remember now, her sin was not that she did any of these things wrong, that there's this laundry list of things that Garrett Graff, you know, lists. It was that she threw Trump under the bus. You know, when she was questioned about some doubtful expenses, she passed the buck. And then Trump dumped her. And right now, it remains to be seen whether Mark Wayne Mullen is going to be better or worse as the new Kristi Noem. Arguably, he is less qualified. We'll see what happens with that. I gotta share one more thing from Garrett Graff for you. He says, quote, I've written plenty over the last years about the cascading man-made disaster that is DHS's immigration enforcement, how it is worryingly acting like it will never face accountability again, its chaotic hiring surge, how the Border Patrol's Greg Bovino is trying to make ICE even more violent, ICE's un-American raids, its collapse of moral legitimacy, and the terrible impacts on the rest of federal law enforcement, and how in 2026, sadly, it's all going to get worse. ICE, I wrote last year, is eating the soul of America. And I add that just because I think more and more people are realizing that what's happening with ICE in our cities, especially in Minneapolis, is very, very problematic, very anti-American, and very unjust. One way to understand that that's what's happening is you notice that ICE and DHS are not unleashing themselves on communities the way they did in Minneapolis. I have no doubt that they're going to continue to do what they're doing, and probably, you know, incarcerating or putting into detention the vast majority of people are not, quote, the worst of the worst. They're not people who have a criminal record, the vast majority. But I have a feeling that will continue, sadly. But I think right now there's been enough pressure from the public that it's not going to be quite as out there as it has been. So consider that a small victory. So I want to say a word about these the detention centers where people are being sent. There's a strong argument that we ought to be calling them concentration camps. Tim Dickinson with the Contrarian writes, Donald Trump's brutal ICE detention facilities have been blasted as concentration camps. Experts in the field have no hesitation in using these words to describe the network of facilities that the federal government is using to literally warehouse tens of thousands of immigrants, men, women, and even children. And I would add, not just immigrants, but in some cases, U.S. citizens. So a journalist, a guy named Frank Abe, he writes that ICE warehouses are, quote, nothing but 21st century American concentration camps. And I'm a third generation Japanese American, and I know a concentration camp when I see one. Now, the author points out that it's essential that we distinguish between concentration camp and extermination camp or extermination center, which is what existed in Nazi Germany. What we have here are concentration camps, but still, even there, people will die of disease, deprivation, denial of medical care, or some level of indifference. Another important critic here is Andrea Pitzer. She's the author of One Long Night, A Global History of Concentration Camps. And she says, quote, a concentration camp is a mass detention of civilians on the basis of identity, something you are rather than what you've done. It is generally used without due process, and it is done to entrench and expand political power for an authoritarian-style government. Well, that describes Trump's detention camps, concentration camps, perfectly. I mean, it's what's happening. You know, masked agents who don't even identify themselves, you know, sometimes breaking down doors, kidnapping people, you know, taking them very, you know, quickly and quietly to, you know, to a place where they are later shipped to one of these concentration camps. And again, I know it rubs people the wrong way because we consider what happened in Nazi Germany to be concentration camps, which they were. They were also extermination centers. And we must never forget how horrific that chapter of human history is. But we should start calling these what they are. They are concentration camps. They are concentrating people, not based on anything they've done, based on who they are. And in many cases, mistakenly. And again, the big lie that we're capturing the worst of the worst. What, 75, 80% of those who've been detained have no criminal record? And I know I hear some of my friends on the right are going to say, well, Ed, crossing the border is a crime. It's not the same thing. And it is not a crime. And again, many of these people have applied for asylum because they are escaping a deadly situation in their home country. So, and I'm not one who says, you know, open the doors and let everybody in. There has to be a process. There has to be some sense of what we can accommodate. But this is not the way to deal with it. And I would say that I don't think any president, Democratic or Republican, has dealt with this problem appropriately. I will give Joe Biden credit for giving it a good shot and having a bipartisan agreement to at least some semblance of a new plan. That maybe you've already forgotten this, folks, but Donald Trump said, nope, kill that bill. I'm going to campaign on this issue. And that is about as cynical as anybody can get in politics. So, yeah, let's start calling it what it is, folks. These are concentration camps, not just detention centers. We're concentrating people there who don't belong there, who aren't getting due process, and who aren't getting treated with the humanity that they deserve. Hey, I got to take a short break. When we come back, the FCC is, they want to actually revoke broadcast licenses if you happen to have a different view of the war in Iran than the Trump administration's official standard. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village.
Good to have you back with me, folks. This is Ed Fallon on the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our partners, including Story County Veterinary Clinic. Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Klipsham asked that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so this program is both a radio show and a podcast, and it also is associated with a blog and a Substack. And the radio show component airs on about a dozen stations all over the country. And our perspective is brought to you from the upper Midwest, from flyover country, from rural red America, but it's certainly a relevant conversation wherever you live. Sometimes we talk about stuff happening here in Iowa because, again, we think it should stuff you should know about. But again, a lot of times we're talking about the bigger, broader concerns that affect everybody everywhere. And here's one of them. The story in The Guardian this week, Donald Trump reinforced comments made by Brendan Carr, who is the chair of the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC. Carr was threatening the broadcast licenses of news organizations that report unfavorably on the war in Iran. Okay. What did Trump say? Well, he said on a Truth Social post, he was thrilled that Carr was, quote, looking at the licenses of some of these corrupt and highly unpatriotic news organizations. And I'm saying it like that because he's writing in all caps, and I don't know how else to. Then he says, Trump says, they get billions of dollars of free American airwaves and use it to perpetuate lies. There's so much wrong with that sentence, those sentences. I don't even know where to start. Free American airwaves? Let me tell you about free American airwaves. Again, a lot of people, this is probably not something you're familiar with because it's kind of inside baseball for somebody who's involved with radio. And I've been involved with radio for 17 years now. There are commercial stations. Those are the big signals, the megawatts. In Iowa, it's WHO radio, which stretches nearly across the whole state. Now, stations like that and other big stations have all been bought by a handful of big companies, iHeart, Sinclair, Cumulus. My show used to be on a station owned by Citadel, and Cumulus bought that one. And they're able to do this because thanks to Bill Clinton, yeah. Bill Clinton signed the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which allowed these big corporations to buy multiple signals in any given market. Previously, because these American airwaves, as Trump says, are, quote, free. Yes, they should be free. They should be free. Obviously, you gotta manage them, but there should be a level of freedom in terms of who accesses these stations. That doesn't happen anymore. Again, thanks to, well, Newt Gingrich, when he was Republican Speaker of the House, and Bill Clinton, they got rid of the limit on how many stations a big corporation can own. Tie that with what happened back in the 1980s with Ronald Reagan, and the elimination of the fairness doctrine, you no longer have to have balance. So, I mean, you know, I guess I should say I first got involved with radio back in the late 80s, early 90s, before I was a legislator. I would go on a show hosted by a pretty right-wing guy, Jan Michelson. He would at least have me on the program. In fact, on three or four occasions when he had to take a break, he let me come and host. So even back in the 90s, there was at least a little more balance on these big stations. Now you won't find that at all. It doesn't exist. The biggest stations just basically shamelessly broadcast themselves as a voice of the Republican Party. And not just Republican writ generally with, you know, a big tent, but a very specific perspective from the Republican universe. Anyway, so That's the commercial radio that we have no access to. They're commercial radios because they are stations because they have commercials and they can say whatever they want. Yeah, they can't drop the F-bomb, but they can say what they want politically. They can say go out and vote for this person. They can criticize certain legislation. They can only have on the people they want. So what does that leave? That leaves public radio, which I like, but it's very specific, and you know. Getting into public radio? No, it's not going to happen. And I do feel sorry for public radio because they really aren't public radio anymore. Their funding was cut years and years ago, and it was eliminated this past year. And they have learned how to try to get by with a version of advertising called underwriting. And overall, I appreciate public radio mostly. But a lot of it is funded by the same, you know, business and corporate interests that find their way into commercial radio. And I will say, you know, disclaimer, my program, my podcast, has underwriters as well that are small, a handful of small locally owned businesses that I have trust are doing that are doing good work and that I know personally. But with the community owned stations, you're only allowed to have underwriters, and you can't endorse a candidate. So I can't tell you to go out and vote for blank. I can't tell you to go out and support certain legislation. I'm also not allowed to drop the F-bomb, which is a good thing. But the bottom line is there's this system in place, commercial, public radio, and community-owned. And you may have guessed it by now, but the community-owned stations are tiny. They're small. So yeah, I'm on a dozen stations. They're all very small stations. I'm delighted to be able to access them. I'm delighted that there are people in those communities that have found a way to purchase the license and to pay for the cost that you need to, you need to build a tower, an antenna, a monitoring board. There are all kinds of things you need to do to make sure that you can operate that station. And I appreciate that people do that. And I appreciate that some of them, allow this program to be on there. But what's going to happen now? I mean, I'm not, you know where I stand on the Iran war. And I've been an equal opportunity critic. If I see a problem from a Democratic politician or administration or a Republican politician or administration, I think it needs to be called out. I won't tell you who to vote for. I won't tell you what bills to vote for or to support. But I will tell you when I think something's off key or when something's going right. And right now, I think the war in Iran is clearly misguided. I think most Americans feel that. Most people, they understand that there was no real plan for getting into it, for what our goals are there, for getting out of it. Here in Iowa, we've already had three of the Americans killed are from here in central Iowa. So that's hitting home here. And for Brendan Carr and Donald Trump to say that, the media is only allowed to say favorable stuff about the war, how is that any better than what Vladimir Putin does in Russia or Xi Jinping does in China? How is that any different than what any other authoritarian, top-down government strongman does? You can't say what you want to say because I don't like it. So I hope that the FCC-regulated entities, like the ones that I am broadcast on, and the much bigger ones in some cases, I hope they have the courage and integrity to continue to report on the war in Iran as they see fit. And I have no doubt that there will be differences of opinion, but that opinion should have a place on the airwaves. Again, the free American airwaves, which we could have a lot more to say about that. So one thing that Carr wrote that is true, he said, broadcasters are running hoaxes and news distortions. Well, he's right about that. And a lot of that is coming. New York Times did a great story on this, by the way. They did a really detailed analysis of AI-generated images from the Iran war. And they found 110 unique images and videos over just the past 2 weeks that are completely fake. I don't know quite how you determine what's fake and what isn't, but they did. And, so some of them, for example, falsely depicted screaming Israelis cowering as explosions ripped through Tel Aviv. Others depicted Iranians mourning their dead. And American military vessels being bombarded with missiles and torpedoes. I mean, some of this stuff is happening, but the images themselves are lies. They're not true. And in some cases, there was one case where a building was being blown up, and it was allegedly happening during the war. It was from 2015, something that happened in 2015. This is not just happening in the war in Iran either, of course. We've seen the same kind of misrepresentations in what's going on in Ukraine. It's a problem. It's a real huge problem, and it's not going to get any better if we don't have some way of regulating and managing AI. Social media companies, unfortunately, of course, have done very little to manage their platforms and to, point out fake videos, fake photos, and to take them down. You know, and I like the one critic called, again, because the government has done nothing to step in and try to, you know, try to create that regulatory framework. One critic calls it, quote, state-sanctioned dishonesty. I think that's pretty accurate. And again, most of the AI videos that the New York Times, you know, discovered, 110 of them, most of them were being, you know, promulgated by the government in Iran. But that doesn't to say that we don't have the same problem here. Who can forget Trump flying in an airplane, dumping, you know, excrement on protesters in New York? Bottom line is there's no effort to, well, there is an effort. There are those in Congress and those in the private sector and the public sector who want to see this industry regulated. But the tech billionaires have been lobbying to defeat any legislation, especially at the state level. You know, the state level is where we've seen, you know, real efforts. But the tech industry keeps thwarting those efforts. And they're lobbying for a federal regulatory framework that is very weak. So again, we have our work cut out for us. But for now, anytime you see something online, question its accuracy, question its truthfulness. Dig deep. I'm sorry, it takes more time, but it's important not to be fooled by these images. Hey, I got to take a short break. When we come back, Kathy Burns will join me. We're going to be talking about some of the positive stuff happening on sustainable agriculture here in the Des Moines Metro. Back in a minute. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
We're having our, as every show, we have our farm and food segment. We save this for last. Usually it's good news. Sometimes it's silly. This time it's really good news.
Mm-hmm.
We got some stuff happening here in Des Moines that we feel very good about.
Yes, the city of Des Moines, and we've talked about this before, established at our suggestion years ago a food security task force, and then due to different maybe administrative issues, it just sort of fell to the wayside. Ed and I had been proud to serve on that task force for a couple of years with some amazing people who know a lot about growing food. And the newly formed City of Des Moines Food Sustainability Advisory Committee is now established and embedded as a permanent part of the city structure.
And that's a step forward because it's more permanent. It's not just a 6-month, you know, look at the issue broadly, but it's an ongoing effort to advise the city on how to move forward on sustainable food production.
Right. They have more direct access to city staff and ability to influence policy and goals of the city.
I like that it's chaired by two economic development staff members who are known for getting stuff done, and also that the city sees that there is some economic value in food production.
Because economic value is not real value unless it also involves social value, health value, benefits to the residents, to we who live in Des Moines and people in the greater Des Moines area. And I think as the capital city of Iowa, it's a great example to set for food production in an agricultural state.
What have you seen in terms of the goal? I mean, again, the committee is just getting going. I think they've only met twice, I believe. But what have you seen in terms of some of the goals?
Well, the official goals are, very briefly, to strengthen local food systems, and that has a lot of components to it, to enhance food sustainability, meaning the continual access of production of food and access to food, and also to increase awareness of food sustainability. And the awareness part, I think, is just more so they don't put all these new programs and policies into place that no one knows about or uses.
Right. And I know previously there was something that came out of the first task force was the Feed DSM website, which was a guide for people trying to grow food at their homes on where to find resources, soil, tools, seeds, what the city code says.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of an expansion of that.
Yes, that website has been silenced for a little bit while the committee looks at some really good ways to bring it up to date and enhance it, and then they will reopen it under a new name.
Now, one thing you and I push for is for the city to have lots, land, that is permanently committed to agriculture, because the problem is sometimes the city will let someone farm a particular piece of land, and then after 2 or 3 years, they'll come in and say, oh, we want to put a business here or a parking lot. And that's really discouraging, because so much work goes into making the land productive and then to lose it to development.
Right. And there are stories out there of that exact thing happening to folks in the area. But the staff at the Economic Development Department, and this is specifically Breanne Bai and Nick Tarpey, who are heading up the advisory committee now, they are in the process of leasing some plots of land to individuals and groups who want to establish an agricultural endeavor, a small business. Perhaps, I don't know if nonprofits will take advantage of this, but it's. I think they already have a couple of people interested in leasing some of this land.
Yeah, and there should be a lot of that. I mean, there's so many. When I was a legislator, I had to ask the city manager to, tell me how many vacant buildable. We weren't talking about food. We were talking about, how we could prevent urban sprawl by building more in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 5,000 lots available. 5,000 lots.
And it's hard to watch those go feral. Plus, if they sit stagnant in a neighborhood, that tends to bring down the social quality of the neighborhood. It might invite crime. It is good to have the land used. And what better way to use land than to grow food?
Yeah.
Delicious food.
So, we're excited about this. We'll see where it goes. Any last words, Kathy?
Well, we're just really encouraged. The staff's enthusiasm about urban ag and the benefits it provides to residents and businesses, their vitality, their well-being is priceless.
Well, Kathy, thanks for joining me today.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, thanks to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Detterman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Westrum Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. And finally, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.